The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show, hour number two. And later this hour, we're going to share our thoughts on the memorial this morning of Ravi Zacharias. I want to make sure and have room for that later in the hour. But for our impact segment and maybe a bit more, there's a commentary that you can access at the very least, townhall.com. It is entitled, The George Floyd Murder, Does Race Matter? The author of the piece is the board chair for the Center for Urban Renewal and Education. He's a commentator. He's a pastor. He's a lawyer. He's an author and author of this latest piece. Mark Little, welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show.
Hi, Frank. It's good to be with you again and with your audience. What a great first hour you had today, remembering a giant. Would that God continue to raise up more Ravi Zacharias. Thank you for that segment.
Well, I want to get to your piece on Town Hall on the George Floyd murder, and there's so much to it. The first question is, what prompted you to write this? I know this was something that just occurred, and I saw yesterday it's up at Town Hall. Why did you write this piece?
Well, there's two answers to that. Having a lockdown order gives you more time than normal to do things that your heart desires. Mm. And I've often have felt the need to respond to things happening in our culture, but time often has gotten in the way. And so in this particular occasion, we're all on lockdown, and we're not all essential employees like you, Frank. So I'm sitting here and I decided that my voice and my perspective needed to be shared. One, as a, I hate to use the word victim, but people understand it easier, as a victim of violent crime, and also as one who was crying out and angry and whose heart was bleeding for what we all saw. And so because I have the platform and the access to be heard, I felt that it was necessary that that I write that piece.
So when we talk about the life and death of George Floyd in your piece on townhall.com, and it's important for this interview and the context of what else you might share, you write clearly, quote, was detained by a sadistic white Minneapolis police officer who held his knee pressed against Floyd's neck for several minutes over a nonviolent allegation. Floyd died shortly thereafter. So for the sake of record, your thoughts on what we saw on that video, and you probably heard earlier today that the officer has been indicted and charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter.
That's right. And so, I'm sorry, I missed your question, Frank. I know you quoted me.
Yeah, the question being, are you outraged by what happened? What did you see on that video? Because we're going to get into some nuances here by which a lot of the public dialogue, when we start talking about race, people start getting emotional and we get selective about what we think is going on.
Right. So I have to say, for me, seeing a man's life squeezed from him. Of course, we didn't know that when we were watching the video. I suppose concurrently with it, though, at some point very quickly thereafter, we learned that he had died. It was probably contemporaneously. But watching it, you're watching in horror. And for me, it wasn't necessarily, my first reaction was not that it was a white officer. My first reaction was that I'm seeing a man die.
Yep.
And I think anyone with a heart and conscience and who is not sadistic, would feel a certain kind of way, would feel the horror of what we witnessed. And then, of course, the second reaction was the history and the knowledge of what we all know happens in this country when we see a black man, presumably unarmed, being murdered by a white cop. And so my second response was, oh boy, this is not going to go well. And thank you for reading that particular sentence, because I've been involved in local law enforcement and policing from a community perspective for a number of years in Inglewood. And I was very active with a local government there, in particular the chief of police at the time. And so I know a little bit about excessive force. And then, of course, as a lawyer, I've done violation of civil rights cases. And so I knew that what I was seeing seemed to me to be sadistic, because George Floyd was apparently handcuffed in the video. His arms weren't flailing. He seemed to be clearly subdued and not a threat. And reasonable people in the industry, whether it be law enforcement or the legal profession, know that what should have been happening was that all those guys apparently standing around or standing or kneeling on him should have been putting him in the car. And so I knew that the results of this were not going to go well, but what I was witnessing was a sadistic act. Someone who apparently was either completely disassociated from the harm he was doing, or worse, was enjoying it.
Now, I want to get to your piece in Town Hall, because you do start with the George Floyd murder, and then you share, does race matter? And you began this piece talking about a woman named Sheila Lucas. Can you get the listeners up to speed on who Sheila Lucas was, and then we'll get into the context of what does race really matter?
Absolutely. Thank you, Frank, for even raising Sheila Lucas's name. For those of you who know me, you know that I'm bi-coastal, and I also live in Washington, D.C. And on the Saturday before George Floyd's murder, a great-grandmother, 71 years old, went to get her granddaughter and great-granddaughter from a local grocery, because they phoned her and said, someone just jumped on us. And so she went up to the grocery store to get them. And when she went, the assault ensued and continued. And this great-grandmother, African-American woman here in Washington, D.C., was trying to break up the fight between these youngsters. And the youngsters who were jumping on her great-granddaughter simply shot her in the head. And as a victim of violent crime, these things stand out for me. And my heart sort of goes back to 1987, to the trauma that I and my family experienced when I was shot with a 12-gauge shotgun and left for dead. And so I raised Sheila Lucas's story because no one was talking about it. I heard about it because of a friend here locally, and then, of course, the local news thereafter, but no one was talking about it. And so I said, and I processed this, I said, her life mattered, and no one's talking about it. And then the George Floyd case came about, and I said to myself, well, and it's not a new question, obviously, because we talk about black-on-black crime all the time, but just not enough. And I dissected it, and I said, okay, I get it. The race of the murderer matters. And that's what then led me to write this piece, because I think that if we're going to talk about justice, It cannot be just for the unarmed black man or woman who has been slain by police officers. Now, I want to be very clear, because some people listening to this interview will say, here we go again.
Right, right.
Distracting from police brutality. And my piece, if you read it, it's very clear. I share the anger. I share the outrage. I share the call for justice. And these officers, all of them, must be arrested, and they must receive due process, and God willing, they will be convicted. So please, listeners, hear me very clearly. I'm not distracting. I'm not diminishing what we're witnessing by the murder of George Floyd. I'm not diminishing the anger that all of our communities feel, including the black community. My point simply is, we always say, there you go, distracting from police brutality. We'll get back to talking about black-on-black crime later. But we never do. We never do. Hundreds of blacks across the country have been slain since George Floyd was slain on Monday. It happens every day, particularly in our inner cities. And they happen, Frank, because there is not only a systemic issue with respect to what leads a officer to do what he did to George Floyd. There's a systemic issue there in law enforcement, in policing, and we can talk about that. But there's also a issue in our communities, and white folk kill white folks at the same rates. So it's not just about black, but I just happen to be black. So I'm talking about what's happening in my community. There are things that we could and should be doing better to prevent that as well. And that is my point. It should not matter the race of the murderer. What should matter is that life is being lost, and we should all care about that. Mm.
Mark Little is my guest. His column on townhall.com is "The George Floyd Murder, Does Race Matter?" I want to read what you wrote, Mark, and then you obviously can comment. This will take a moment, but I think it's important to read it in the public record for people that don't know what you wrote, because I agree, as you said, there are those that will go, here we go again, like somehow denying something that's so blatantly obvious. Let me read your words. Quote, "Police brutality has rightly been a concern within the black community. Police owe a duty to everyone they encounter and are held to a higher standard of care. Notwithstanding their oath to protect and serve, police brutality cases that held the attention of many have become a rallying cry within the black community." And you talk about Oscar Grant in Oakland, Eric Garner in New York, Philando Castile, Minnesota, Tamir Rice, Cleveland, Azelle Ford in Los Angeles, Rodney King, we remember that. You say these cases prompted a well-deserved outcry from the families of these victims and from their respective communities, if not the nation. Here's the part I want to get to. You also go on to write, "These kinds of murders hit a nerve that runs deep within the black community and almost always elicit a national outcry. It's an emotional core that pushes back against the memory and the pain of racism, betrayal of authority, and the historical bias of the criminal justice system, in my opinion," you say. Here's the part. "In response to these tragedies, I often hear, quote, 'We've had enough.' You write, 'But that cry begs a question, had enough of what?'" End quote, Mark Little from this town hall piece. We've had enough of what? Can we get into that? Because I think that's the core of maybe what is avoided in a lot of the public dialogue and what the media will cover.
Sure. It's clear to me, Frank, given the response to police brutality, that we've only had enough of police brutality. Unfortunately, we have not had enough of deaths overall. There isn't an outcry to protect the sanctity of life in the womb. There isn't an outcry to protect people like me who, by the grace of God, survived but there are many like me who did not. We haven't had enough of that, but we have had enough of black lives being lost to police brutality. And so my subtext there is, we should have enough of it all. And it should not be limited to police brutality, specifically white officers on unarmed black men and women. We shouldn't draw the line there. And unfortunately, we have, and our leaders will say to me, this is a distraction. It's going to take away from bringing about change that we need in this regard. But they do us all a disservice when they draw a line at police brutality. Yes, they're called to a higher standard. Yes, we have a historical recollection of oppression at the hands of police officers. Yes, our communities suffer in great ways from trauma. And that's the heart of the issue. We have a trauma issue, but the trauma isn't limited to police brutality. We have families and kids in these families and cousins and aunties and mothers who see domestic violence every day. And they walk around, Frank, not understanding that they are traumatized. They're traumatized by the alcoholic father who comes home in many regards, feeling discrimination on the job, if you will. And he comes home and he takes it out on his family. Those kids, that mother, they're traumatized. And so we shouldn't draw the line on just police brutality. The larger issue is, and it's just not the black community, Frank, but the larger issue is that our communities have trauma related to violence. And so when you see the outcry that we see now around the country, let's put on the shelf for a moment that some of these riots are induced by third parties that are not from these communities. Mm-hmm. I think that's perhaps a different show. But we know from Ferguson, we know from Baltimore, that there is that element. And even in Minneapolis today, we have video footage of local blacks on the ground telling Antifa, this is not your matter. But let's save that for later. We have a genuine element in our communities that when they see something like that happened to George Floyd, it resonates with something within their own experience that causes them to respond in a way that is, in many instances, violent, in many instances, in my opinion, unresponsive to the real issue. The real issue, I'm not a psychologist, but I have the pleasure of having been a part of an organization that talks about trauma and that is responding to trauma, and that is the Ulmer Institute, founded by Bishop Kenneth Ulmer. And I have a firsthand awareness that if you ask people walking around or in your church or in your schools, are they traumatized? Most of them will say no. But then you ask them, have you ever seen someone shot? Yes. Have you ever seen your mother be beaten by another man or your father or someone? Yes. Have you ever been beaten down at school and chased by gang members? Yes. They suffer from trauma, and they don't even know how to identify with it. And so when you see people jump to the streets and start throwing bottles and rocks, it is in response to a natural reaction to seeing someone murdered, yes. But the kind of response that we're seeing, I say, Frank, and I believe, given my exposure to trauma, that there's something more to it. And so as we seek trauma, someone asked me the other day, Michael Fisher, asked me the other day on his Facebook Live, what does justice look like?
Yep, that's one of the questions I was going to ask. Great question.
I said, that's a great question, Pastor Fisher. I said a conviction delivers justice for the family, primarily. A conviction brings justice for that community, secondarily. Mm-hmm. I said, but responding to the trauma in that community brings justice for the community, primarily. Mm-hmm. We have to start dealing with what's happening under the veneer of our consciousness, of our existence as people, as a community. And by the way, let me broaden this out a bit. Our white brothers and sisters get blamed for stuff that they didn't do. What does that do to them? They walk around now with what we've got a fancy term for it, white privilege. Yeah. Now, if I was living in Africa and someone told me that I had black privilege, you know, I might feel some kind of way if that wasn't my disposition. And so maybe that's for another show. This stuff is complex. It's complicated. But what I wrote was trying to spark this very kind of dialogue around race. And where do we draw a line? Why do we draw a line at police brutality when the broader community, who is impacted by black-on-black crime at 88%, is really the part of the community that's wounded? Mm. And so when the 88% is wounded and they see someone murdered on TV, in part, Frank, they're responding out of their pain.
Yep, yep.
That's my point.
Mark Little is author of the piece at townhall.com, The George Floyd Murder, Does Race Matter? We're going to continue with one more segment with Mark. 888-528-2557 are the numbers, and we will continue with more of the Frank Sontag Show next. Welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show. My guest is pastor and lawyer, author Mark Little. Town Hall has a new piece, commentary, op-ed. Mark wrote, The George Floyd Murder, Does Race Matter? If you missed the impact segment, you would best go back to our podcast section after the program and listen to this entire interview for contextual purposes and also for a deeper understanding of a very complex issue. Mark, on the break, I have other programming that I was going to get to later in the hour, and I just spent a moment in prayer, and I think that I want to ask you, can you do the hour? Because there's so much more to talk about, and I don't want to somehow just jam it into like an eight-minute segment, and then we move on, because I just get a sense from the call response, my emails, there's a lot more that needs to be discussed in the time we have. Can you stay for the hour?
I'd be honored to.
Okay, so time is of the essence. I want to get into a separate conversation that's happened recently, or some would say, no, it's part of an ongoing dialogue. We saw earlier President Trump tweeted about such things in Minneapolis, and I can read the actual tweet that Twitter censored, I guess, took down. But now the outcry is he's glorifying violence. He's unhinged. This president is a large part of the problem as it applies to this dialogue. How do you respond to any of that?
Well, in full disclosure, I think it's fair to first say to your listening audience that I am a Republican and I am a Trump supporter. And so I think that disclosure is appropriate. And so, but I do have a perspective, and as a pastor, I typically and always try to lean toward a biblical worldview on all things, because Trump will one day not be in office. So my default is Christ, not Trump. And so in response to your question, you have to understand in context that dating back to when he was a candidate, And there were people on the floor of his rallies that may have done or said something inappropriate, that there's always this transference on to him. And that's just politics. I get it. I think when the president said that quite quickly that he was going to dispatch the DOJ to investigate this, as Obama did in Ferguson, I thought that was the right response. I know that he spoke to the family today, and that was the right response. And I don't know if the president had anything to do with it, but we know we had at least one arrest today, and that was the right response, with God willing, more to come. Now, to your point, when the president tweeted that with looting comes shooting, a reasonable person, and I do mean reasonable and non-political or apolitical, a reasonable person would say, well, that makes sense. I didn't hear the president say, with looting, I'm going to dispatch the Army or the U.S. Marshals or, you know, whatever other authority he has under him to go and start shooting people. That's not what I heard. And in fact, after the tweet, if you're following the news, a gunshot, a store owner shot a looter. Similarly, the same thing happened in Louisville. What the president said was right. But for those that have a mind to be political and to do all they can to cast aspersions and to make him a racist, it's very easy in this culture and with the media that we have to do that. It is unfair. It is untrue. And everything that this president has done, his policies suggest that this man is the farthest thing from being a racist, either before his presidency or during his presidency. And so I think it's unfair to him, and it's quite frankly unfair to the nation, who has got a president who obviously very much cares about what happens to all Americans, but especially in the inner cities, quote unquote, the African American community. And so that's how I feel about it. You know, he has historically written tweets, Frank, that are inarticulate. He's not a politician. You can tell he's writing them himself. And unfortunately, these things leave room sometimes for interpretation, and perhaps that can be a lesson to him to be more precise, because sometimes you get friendly fire when it doesn't have to be. But for me, I just didn't read it that way, but those who are inclined to paint him as a racist will take every opportunity to do so, and you know, despite the facts of his policies that actually saved historically black colleges and universities with over $300 million forgiveness in debt that have promised them, guaranteed them their annual funding. Before President Trump, historically black colleges and universities, even under Obama, had to grovel annually to Washington, D.C., while the other white, historically white universities have guarantees in place. I mean, we don't talk about these things. We don't talk about the opportunity zones that this president put in place, born out of the jobs cuts, tax cuts and jobs act that are rebuilding inner cities as we speak. We don't talk about these things. We don't talk about the lowest black unemployment in recorded history because of his policies. And so, you know, I don't know what to say to people who default to the president is racist. It means that they're either intentionally disingenuous, or they're woefully ignorant. It's one of the two.
Mark Little is my guest. I guess a follow-up question / comment to what you just shared. I want to get into maybe the last segment, circle back to a word you used, trauma. There's a tendency to blame here. We live in at least my view, a lot of people blaming others. In this case, we've got a president, boy, I won't name her, Maxine Waters, said the other day, somehow, you know, he's the reason why George Floyd, Trump is the reason why George Floyd was killed. And this blame game going on. And so here's the question. Facts over emotion. You just stated facts that you can't argue with, and yet we live in a time when the media says half the country looks to this man as the worst president ever. And yet I know your heart. We want to get down to at least the conversation about some level of honesty here in helping solve this problem, not create more of the problem through blaming and being disingenuous and the media doing what the media does. I mean, the media has their own agenda in and of itself.
That's right. Let me get to the heart of it, Frank. You're absolutely right. We live in a culture in a day and age where we allow our elected officials inherently politics to govern the narrative and to govern our lives. We have to understand that these people work for us. And we have to stop following political narrative and get to the truth of the matter. President Trump's knee was not on George Floyd's neck. And as much as I've been in relationship with Congresswoman Waters for the better part of 20 years, it is just outrageous to draw a connection between a knee on George Floyd's neck and President Trump. When do we hold people responsible for their actions? The buck stops with the knee. It doesn't go to Washington, D.C. Sorry, it just doesn't. Policy, and this is the heart of the matter, Frank, policy needs to be created and put in place that prevent these shootings year over year. Policies that say if a police officer has a history of this sort of thing, Dick Gregory said it best, and I'm no follower of Dick Gregory. I certainly respect his history and what he means to our culture. But he said something that was profound and true. And perhaps, Frank, you'll find this clip at some point in a show in the future. But he said that police officers should be like cab drivers who are licensed to drive that cab. And they're insured. And when they mess up, there is a consequence. And where there are consequences, and anybody that knows law enforcement and knows the culture, there are rarely consequences because of the union and a number of other things. And so when there are consequences, someone with the ability to take a life has to ask themselves, do I dislike this person so much that I will trade being able to feed my family? Mm. There's got to be something that triggers someone like Officer Chauvin, or however you pronounce it, to say, how long has my knee been on his neck? And what's going to be the consequence, as opposed to, I got away with this once before, which we've now learned that he has, and I'll get through this. I'm going to do what I think is my job, despite hearing this man tell me that he can't breathe. And just yesterday, I believe, in the same community, we see officers on the front lawn of a home punching someone in the back because he can't get his arms behind his back with a wife or girlfriend screaming. He has a spinal condition. He has a spinal condition. Stop punching him in his back. Those officers should have something that requires them to think twice about their actions. And that is where we get to policy. The people that represent us, whether at the local level or at the federal level, they need to be putting policy in place that makes it less likely for these shootings to continue for anyone, whether they be black, Hispanic, white, or Asian. There needs to be policy that protects us all.
Mark Little is my guest. His op-ed piece at Town Hall is The George Floyd Murder. Does race matter? When we come back, we will talk more about this commentary, and maybe we'll ask directly, does race matter? And also, Mark closes with this. If you're just joining us, I want to share this context. It's important to the conversation. Mark writes, a note to the black community. I favor justice for George Floyd, but justice for Sheila Lucas must not be excluded. She's a 71-year-old grandmother who was shot and killed in Washington by a black man. And so Mark writes, it's both and race must not matter. We must all stand for all lives, no matter the race of the murder, and seek justice for everyone. That's the heart of this piece. We will continue with more of Mark Little's commentary, The George Floyd Murder, Does Race Matter? Here on the Frank Sontag Show next. Welcome back to this, the Frank Sontag Show. Mark Little is my guest, commentator, also author, lawyer, pastor. His piece at townhall.com, The George Floyd Murder, Does Race Matter, is obviously available to any of you that go online and look at townhall.com. Mark, in the few moments we have, I want to circle back to something you brought up, and that was the word trauma. And in this very complex story and the way it is interpreted in the media and the way they spin it, I want to get back to if there's even such a thing as healing or how we can really address some of the core tenets of what goes on with racism and violence. And I mean, last thing, one might even say, you know, this is a fallen world. As followers of Christ, we know that. But I just want to try to get to a level of hope if there's such a thing. So what about healing as it opposed to the conversation of trauma and so much of what we see ongoing all across our country?
Frank, thank you so much for circling back to it, because there's more to be said. And I think this is a perfect way to end the show, to talk about the role of the church, to talk about the greatest commandment, to love God with your heart, mind, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. And that, as a biblical matter, is how we deal with racism. If we can teach that, and to promote the gospel in that way, that will go a long way, because the word says, if I be lifted up, I'll draw all men unto me. And guess what? If Jesus is doing the drawing, we'll be looking at a healed community and a healed nation. But the church has a role to play. If we could start with destigmatizing counseling, if we can start ministering to our people that there are statistics out there that tell us that you're traumatized and it's undiagnosed, that you're walking around wounded and you don't even know it. And so when someone steps on your toe, you pull out your knife and stab them. Hypothetically, obviously. There are wounds in our community that are open wounds that we have not even begun to recognize that they're there, let alone stitch them up. So the church has a role, obviously, to administer the gospel, but to practically respond to people. If we're talking about black folk, we can go through each culture. Everybody's got their own thing. So I'm talking to everybody. Everybody's got their own history and their own thing. And you know what that is as a leader of your congregation. But to begin to encourage people to unpack that unspoken trauma so that they can go and begin a journey of healing physically, emotionally, and spiritually. The word says he wants us to live life abundantly. And that includes all of those areas. And then you can throw in finances, but that's not what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. We're talking about spiritual healing, physical healing, emotional healing. But so many of our communities have a stigma, especially the Black community, around seeking counseling. And so perhaps there's a call in response to what's happening now in almost every major city in this country. I just saw that they're now in Atlanta standing in the streets. I believe there's a plan for New York. I'm sure Chicago will follow quickly, right? And these things are not civil disobedience. They're riots. And they're riots because, well, a lot of things, we've already talked about it, but they're riots. Riots are an unreasonable response to the call for justice. Right? So what we've got to do is get back into our church houses, recognize that we've got open wounds that are beyond people just in need of salvation, but we've got open wounds that are in many instances historical in our treatment in this country or historical in our treatment in our places of origin that we come bring to this country or that were created here that need to be attended to. Mm. And so the Black community is what we're talking about today because of George Floyd. And we've already talked about the historical bias. We talk about the oppression that is undeniable. It's a history, whether it's Black codes or Jim Crow, or the need for affirmative action in the workforce or in housing. These things are historical. They're real. Racism is not the reason for people, in my opinion, in this day and age, to not succeed, but we can't act like it doesn't exist either. And so there's a way to respond to that, and I believe that there's a role for the church, and I believe people like Bishop Ullman and others have done series on these things, but we have to put feet to our faith and feet to how we practically administer the love of Christ to the people of Christ and to those who are seeking Christ. Mm.
Mark Little is my guest. We literally have 1 minute. Anything you want to share in that brief moment we have left?
Thank you, Frank, for having me, as always. It's an honor for me to be able to speak to you and to your listeners. I don't take it for granted. I want to say just two things, maybe three, quickly. One is that I wanted to be clear that I am a supporter of law enforcement. Without law enforcement, our communities and our elderly and people who are vulnerable would have nowhere to turn. And so I encourage people who are passing on the street as I do, when you pass by a police officer, thank them. Thank them. At Faithful Central, we did a community forum, and we invited the police into our house of worship to interact with our community. And that we need to do more of that, number one. Number two, don't let politics govern how you think and how you see what's happening. What we saw was a knee on a neck. That has nothing to do with Donald Trump. It has nothing to do with Maxine Waters. It has to do with seeking justice for George Floyd's family. And finally, make sure you're in a church seeking what the Lord would have you do. What is your calling in this season? I shared with Michael Fisher the other day, not every church is called to be politically engaged. But as a leader, as a senior a pastor who might be listening, is your calling to interact and to engage in government and in politics? And if so, get some understanding about what that looks like, because the community needs you now more than ever.
Mm. Mark Little is author of the piece, The George Floyd Murder, Does Race Matter, at townhall.com. Mark is an author, a pastor, a leader in our community, and also board chair of Center for Urban Renewal and Education. I love you, brother. Thank you for this hour. It was way too quick. Lord willing, we'll do many more and promote Jesus is the only answer and promote healing in our community that so needs it. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Frank.
All right. We will continue with more. This is the Frank Sontag Show.